Mr. Carter, reel 5.
What was it like on the frontier the second time round?
Well, I wasn't there long. The changeover always took part in about November or October or something, the cold season. I mean, it was shows how tough they were, the British soldiers at the time, like, because they'd never been down in a hot place all the summer, you know, in the heat. Then they go straight up to the extreme, you see, And they always gave them, when they went back up there, they always gave them what they call a month to condition themselves. Nothing energetic, because it was high up, you see, and that was a conditioning of it. But as I say, it was, I wasn't there 3 or 4, maybe 3 months or something like that. I know on the Christmas, I spent it on the train going to Bombay. I'd left. You see, a scheme came out then where long-serving soldiers, I think it was called the Python scheme, I'm not sure, and 12 men of in rotation, you know, seniority, once a month, if they wanted, could put the names down to go back to England, you see. And some didn't and some did. But I looked at it this way. It was either the Japs or the Germans. I mean, we'd been lucky so far. We hadn't... the chips were stacked against us, as you might say. We were right... The day would come when we couldn't remain as we were. They'd pick us out and we'd be away to Burma, you see. So I thought, right, I might as well risk going home and seeing my family like rather than stop. So I put my name down and, as I say, I left about Christmas. 42, it would be. Christmas 42. And we travelled down to Bombay. And that's the first time I'd been to Bombay. I think we remained there a good month waiting for a ship. We were in a transit camp and I saw Bombay, quite a bit of Bombay, and as I say, that was quite enjoyable and... We then got a ship. I think it was a Devonshire. And I was mating on with a lad out of the Scots regiment. And he hadn't a good word for India as we sailed out of Bombay. He cursed it upside down. But little did we know, we hadn't left India, because we sailed up the coast and we landed at Karachi. And not more surprised was the next batch of our fellows. They were waiting to catch this ship, like. And they imagined I was home, but I'd been waiting. So we had another batch of our fellows came on, and then we loaded Poles who'd come through Russia. Russia had released them. And these were all young fellows. They went into the first class on the top. Oh, they were all dressed up in battle dress and caps and that and the other like. We'd never seen a battle dress. Never seen one. Here they were. And then the women came on. They were all women and sort of style. And they went down below in with us. We were in one combat and they were down below like. And I felt sorry for them women because we were on the equator there like. And some of them suffered badly like down below. Yet these young devils up at top there, they were high and mighty, and I didn't think much of the Poles, I can tell you that, when I saw the threat I'm like, because, of course, we went round to, where is it, Mozambique, Beira. And that's where they were unloaded, all these women. They unloaded them, and I suppose they'd go to Rhodesia. Quite a lot of them. And then there was 3 ships. We unloaded on there, and then we sailed into Durban. And we're there a few, not long, and then we set off for Cape Town, those three ships. And as we come round the, for Cape Town, right, round the spur there, I was watching the flickering of the signalling lamp light. I could read a bit of signalling. So just for, I just sat back there. I knew the names of the ship, and he was flickering out. So-and-so ship will lead, followed by so-and-so, so-and-so. quite interesting to read it like. And we arrived in Cape Town, and there's a big transit camp on the outskirts of Cape Town, and I know the first time we were mustered, there was all regiments, there was, that had these time-expired men coming from Burma and all over, there was all sorts, there was, Scots, all sorts. And of course, he gave us a dressing down, he says, the officer in charge, like, he says, you're now in South Africa, he said, and they have their own laws here. And he gave us the lowdown, like, he says, you know, the colour bar, and he says, even if some of these girls look as though they're white, he said, and you caught talking to them, he says, you'll be inside, like, and if you aren't tried here, you'll be tried in England, you see. Yeah, I thought, well, that's very good, like, you know, I don't think any of us lads, like, after all these years, will risk being detained or charged against them. They'll be looking forward to going to England, but I was mistaken. On the first night I went down to Cape Town, we all went down there, and I think everyone was with a black un. So much for his warning, like. But I know one lad before me, he did get caught, because when I got back to barracks in England, rest of his mates were on leave. I said, well, what's up with you, like? Oh, he says, the charge followed us from South Africa. He said, I was talking to one of the coloured ones, like, he says, and the charge followed us. He says, I got 14 days, I had to stop here. I know it seems strange, but there was a bloke of ours, we never thought much of his name. I never, like, he just took it for granted. He was called Drinkhall. You used to call him Drinky. So on this first parade, when they were calling our names out, when it came to Drinkhall, there was a rumble at back, one of these Scotchmen, like, and he said, you better bloody well not, like. So, oh, we had I think we had about 3 or 4 weeks there. And I say, this Scotchman, he was pretty quiet, he had mated with him, and I was on my own one day. I'd gotten on with a girl, and she worked in a hospital for elderly, rich elderly or something. She took me there once. It was a select place. It's called Pinelands. There's no shops, there's no darkies. That's to keep them out. It's all select white, you see. So, 'cause I asked, you travel by electric train, I asked the one of the station blokes. Well, most of the fellas, like, didn't go on leave. They lived from day to day. Well, from Friday to Friday. They got the pay and straight into a solo school, and they stopped there till they lost a lot, like. Then the sub for the... A sub till the next day, like, off the charwell or anything, and that was their life. You know, they could play all through the night solo till they lost all the money, so they had no money to go and leave. But The entitlement to go on leave was always there. You always could go a month if you wanted anywhere, like, on leave. Providing, as I went to a Red Cross club, or you could go and be attached to another regiment, like, you see. But they didn't seem to take advantage of that. I always looked at it this way. It was a month's rest and seeing a bit more of India, what you want, and I took them opportunities, but I would say the others didn't. They were quite content where they were, gambling or just where they were. But there also was the entitlement for a lot of them, if they wanted. Them that had done 6 years could have gone home on leave on a six months if they wanted, in England during the summer. But the only snag to that was they had to sign on for another 6 years. But if you knew your regiment was maybe ending its tour of service, there was advantages there. You had to look at these things, like. And but most of them who went on that 6 months later UK, as I said, were mostly band boys who'd enlisted when maybe they were 14, you see, and became men or something like that. And of course, they soon did the 6 years and they were way back. They made a career of the army as bandsmen or something like that. But otherwise, nobody seemed to bother much about leave.
How did you choose which places to go and spend your leave?
Well, as I said, Madras was more or less nearest to where, from Jubbalpore, so I chose that. I once went from Firozpur to Karachi, but that was like a rest. It was arranged by the army, like, and you could volunteer for that. I went on that for a month. There was rest camps you could go to from the frontier if you wanted, but I don't know. They didn't seem to bother. They seemed to be in a rut, a lot of them. They didn't seem to want to go anywhere much. I mean, we were once, when we were at Firozpur, I think it was just before Russia came into the war. There was a time when they didn't know which way she would go, either the German side or coming to war or not, like. And I don't know whose idea it was, like, but they sent us up from Firozpur into Kashmir. And that was to prepare base camps in case of what Russia came into war, like. It was a welcome change for us, like, because we were in pine woods, like, and a lovely place is Kashmir, you see. And when you come to think, it was a damn silly thing, like, to think, because if Russia had come in, we didn't stand a cardinal's chance. But we went up there to prepare base camps in the pine forests and that, you see. And it was a welcome break for us. And,
was there much difference in the way Indians in the towns treated soldiers and Indians in the country?
Yes, there was. The ones in the town, there was. You couldn't get on with them. All they looked on you was for what they could get out of you. And to the villagers, like, were more simpler kind of people that had working and that and to the. You had no trouble with them, but them in towns, you couldn't trust them. Yes, the uniform changed a great.
Was there much change in the uniform while you were in India?
Well, the putties were changed. They used to be a full length till about 1937, and then they cut them down. And as I say, the shorts. Well, when war came, somebody came up with the bright idea of extending the shorts so that you tucked them into your socks or something. Not your socks, your... they were like a stocking, and you tucked them into there. This was during the night. You changed at night into trousers on account of mosquitoes, you see. Shorts during the day. But they thought they'd save material on trousers by putting a bit extra onto the shorts, and it was buttoned up above the thigh with buttons, and then night time you unbuttoned it and tucked it in and covered your knees with that. It was a shocking thing, was that. It looked ugly, like. However, I would say I got over that by... he provided a white uniform. We had white made for ourselves. We paid for them. White trousers and a white tunic shirt. And that was our walking out outfit, which was far better than ever I saw. I think we were about the only regiment that had it too. And, of course, on the frontier, they had for, which I haven't mentioned, that for night time, walking about, was a pair of sandals which are called chaplies. They're like a strap, just like a sandal. And you're always issued with them, was frontier troops, to go on the frontier. Because you put them on at night, so you were just walking about camp to relieve your boots. They were not a bad thing. And then... another thing what we changed was we never used to wear a cap badge in a topi, but our CEO got the idea it looked smarter with a cap badge in front, so we put a cap badge in front. And I admit it looked much better, like, than just... You see, the topi, they always had the regimental colour in the lining round. Green was ours, just a strip of green round it. Others had different... a lot of them had cap badges in, but... And that was that. That was the biggest relief, was the old putty, like, because you could get dressed in no time then.
Did you expect British rule to end when it did in India?
No, I didn't expect it to give in like that, like. Although Churchill had, I think he'd come on record as saying that they'd get independence, Indians, like. But I didn't expect it to come as quick as it did. And us to get out like we did. I know, again, this was down Bombay. I was talking to an Anglo-Indian, was it like, a woman, and I was more or less saying it as a just off chance, like. I says, "And they want Indian rule," I said to her, like. And she said, "Why not?" Of course, it was worse for them, like. I mean, they were between two cleft sticks, like. I mean, the British didn't want them and the Indians didn't want them, but seem to have settled down now, I suppose.
Were you told anything about Gandhi or the Congress or Jinnah or any Indian politics at all?
No, we were... we used to read the papers, like, about them and listen to them, but we didn't... it didn't interest us, didn't what he was doing on this and the other. It might have been better if we were told, like. I don't know, but as you say, in the army, the politics is left alone, left to them and go on. But they certainly at that time when we were 40, 42 and around there, they had the chance then, like, to hit us in the when Japan was coming well up, and that, they thought there was a chance there. They were going to cause a lot of trouble, and as I say, it was put down with a firm hand, and that was the end of it.